Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 28th, 2009, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long, and I brought back less luggage than I took on the ship, Chris. And you brought back more.
Yeah, I brought back a pig. you know, I've been called a pig before, but never for this reason. Apparently, I have contracted swine flu from someone on the ship, and that's why we're doing it on Skype today, not in the studio, because I did not want to infect everyone at WDAE.
Yeah, because, you know, once you infect that microphone there, it seeps out over the airwaves, and everybody that hears it gets sick, so that's very responsible of you. I avoided the lamb chops on the last day because I didn't want to get lamb flu, because I think that's going to be the next big thing. But buddy, I hope you get a little better, and we get back from the cruise, and it was a good time, and we will detail blow for blow all the excitement that we had on the ship. It was a great trip. In our main topic a little later today. But we've got other fun stuff to talk about first, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's been a good week for Annie Up.
I think so. I think some people may or may not have known just from our post on our news blog, but we have partnered up with Poker News, the world's largest poker news site in the world, and pardon my redundancy there, but we're very excited about it. It was a fantastic impromptu meeting that happened in Vegas. Thank God we went to the World Series.
Yeah, yeah. Not that we were not going to ever go to the World Series, but that's why you go to the World Series, is to have something like this happen to you.
Yep. You know,
we find ourselves having dinner with Tony G, a class guy, and, you know, next thing you know, a couple months later.
Yeah, we're, you know, I'm in the expo, and I call my wife to see how it's going, and she says, "Hey, have you interviewed Tony G?" And I was like, "Tony G? Let me say that. Why would you ask me that?" She's like, "Well, I like Tony G. I want to see why he, you know, why he's like that at the table and stuff." And I said, "I'm afraid of Tony G, hon. I'm not gonna interview him. I don't want him to tell me to get on my bike." And she's like, no, if you see him, you better talk to him. And literally, as I'm hitting the off button on my phone, I turn to my left, and he's standing right next to me. I mean, if that's not divine intervention, I don't know what is. So I start talking to him, and the next thing we know, we have a meeting with him, and we're partnering with him.
Yeah, yeah. So we, we'll have a lot more details on this in the coming weeks as we iron out some stuff. But I think it's going to be a real good news for the Annie Up Nation, both the PokerCast and the magazine folks. I think it's going to be good stuff for all that. And really good stuff for our website. They're working now on really helping our website out a little bit. So stay tuned, and when we have more concrete details, you'll be first to hear it.
Absolutely.
On the Annie Up PokerCast, right?
Absolutely. It's a very exciting time for us, and we're looking forward to see how far we can take this. But you know what else is exciting this week?
We took the Annie Up name farther than we've ever taken it before, correct?
It was incredible, man. Not only did I make my World Series of Poker broadcast debut, but so did the Annie Up patch.
Yes, yes.
Our good buddy Tony Cousineau, who was actually our Annie Up World Series of Poker Player of the Year this year, agreed to wear our patch. And again, some sort of divine intervention puts him at Phil Hellmuth's table on day 1C and who else is going to get a featured table other than Phil Hellmuth coming in a toga? And so he's at the featured table, and our patch is on TV.
Woohoo!
And if you watch the broadcast, you can see my big ugly nose behind him. Because I was there interviewing him and talking to him a little bit and watching him play. And sure enough, there I am behind him. Scary stuff there, but pretty cool.
Excellent. Well, we'll have to ask Norman Chad about that. We're talking to him pretty soon, and I'm sure he'll have a comment on Chris Cosenza being on the telecast.
I was disappointed, though, because I had made a comment about the world not needing to see Hellmuth in a toga.
Yeah, that didn't make it,
but
right?
It didn't make it. It ended up on the floor somewhere. So,
wow.
But, you know, the World Series isn't all about me, so, you know, I need to accept that and move on.
Well, once again, we thank Tony Cousineau and Gina Delk and Lee Childs and Tom Turley and Lauren Finkelstein and everybody else who wore the great Annie Up patch out at the World Series. And it's nice to see it made it on TV. And maybe we'll see it more. We don't know, right?
No, that's it. That's definitely the last chance we're going to have to see it.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think it's going to happen again, but we'll see. It might happen somehow. Maybe some flashback footage or something, but I don't think anybody had a patch on day two or later after that, so that was it.
We'll see. You know, we had a couple day twos. It wouldn't be at the feature table, though, so it might be some outbursts later on, but we'll see.
Pretty
cool. And then, but of course, the tournament series that everybody has got their eyes focused on now, the Annie Up Intercontinental Poker Series, Apes.
And clearly the patch did its job, because on Tuesday night, it's on national TV. On Wednesday night, over 1,000 people show up for an Omaha free roll. Clearly, the advertising works on ESPN. And, of course, you and I didn't play in it. We figured if 1,000 people show up, they don't need us.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You were, of course, battling the effects of your pig flu. And I was driving back from an Annie Up live event here in Florida. So neither one of us could be there for the mayhem, and I stress capital M in mayhem. If you go to the forum at AnnieUpMagazine.com/forum, there's a great series of posts from our good friend Gambit as he was playing in this 1,000-person free roll last night. I think he ended up actually getting the seat out of that. So, you know, for those folks that were up for, probably 27 hours.
And they're still playing right now.
Yeah. and we're able to get a seat. Congratulations. That is insanity. We appreciate you coming out. And for those of you who did not win a seat and you want to buy in like Chris and I are going to have to, it will be September 9th, 9 p.m. Eastern, PokerStars.com. Password is ANTIUP. $5 plus 50 cents. Limit Omaha 8. And we'll see you there. And it probably will be fewer than 1,000 people, I'm guessing.
And, you know, I think the swine flu was taking effect on me even before I got on the ship. Because, you know, last week we had the Apes winner from the month before call in and leave a nice little message for us on the hotline. And I put it in the system, and I put it in the show, and when the show played back, it wasn't there.
It was on the cutting room floor, just like
and I don't know what the hell happened to it. I had it, I put it on, I exported it, and it's not there. And you know, that's what happened. I had no cruise on my mind, I guess. Maybe something happened, I don't know. But we do have the Apes clip for you guys, though, for our champion from last month. So let's play it now for him, because I feel really bad didn't make last week's show.
And you're going to make sure it's there this time, right?
We'll see. It'd be hilarious if it doesn't make it again.
All right, let's do it.
Hi, guys. This is XTR Steve. I'm pretty excited about winning the Apes event last night. I took a free roll entry and turned it into a win. It took some major luck to get it done, including a sick two-outer on the river. Couple other doubling up helped me out, especially the one with Blasman calling my ace-king all-in with his suited connectors. Thanks, Blasman. Anyway, long-time listener, glad to have the banana on the mantle. And also, good job to Big Al. who gave me a tough heads-up match at the end.
Well, right, congratulations again, and and of course we're sorry about.
Well, not really, because it gave us something to talk about.
So. That's true. It's actually, it made it even better, right?
Yeah, we're on the cruise ship, and Dr. Frank comes up to me and says, "Hey, did you know that you left out the Apes clip?" I was like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, here, listen." And then he gives me his greasy earbud and puts it in my ear. And then I listen, and sure enough, it's missing. I couldn't believe it. That's always my biggest fear, is that I screw something up on the show, and then thousands of people are going to email me with F-bombs. And
yeah, well, maybe Al Gore was censoring the internet or something. So just decided to take that clip out because he's upset that he didn't win.
But. Oh, my God.
All right, well, as I said, I was not able to attend last night's festivities because I was down in Palm Beach playing at the Palm Beach Poker Classic and then driving home. And, Chris, driving home a lot earlier than I thought. Had I not made a couple other stops to poker rooms on the way back, I probably could have been home in time for that 1,000-player mayhem last night. But real quickly, there was something that I haven't seen before, and it generated some discussion at our table. And I know the Andy Up Nation loves to have stuff to discuss. So here was the situation. We were in the stud round of the horse tournament, and there was a bet and a fold, and next thing you know, the player in the eighth seat right by the dealer, whoa, hold on! You just took my door card!
Oh, my God.
And the dealer was like, oops, sorry! And she felt terrible, obviously. I mean, she was just sweeping cards and accidentally got his door card before he had acted, right?
Yeah.
It was in the muck. So a momentary thing as we're all trying to figure this whole situation out, the guy in the two seat goes, "Hey buddy, sorry. Your hand's dead, is in the muck. You gotta protect your hand."
How do you protect the stud hand?
And that's what the guy in the eighth seat is like, "Protect my hand? How do I protect my door card? You want me to put a chip on my door card?" So we were all kind of laughing, but we're really interested in how this was going to play itself out. So I'm going to put you on the spot here, Chris, and I don't expect you to have a good answer because I didn't have a good answer. But what would you think would happen in this situation?
Well, I would think the dealer would call the floor over, and then the floor would ask maybe the flanking players what the card was and if anybody knew and could recall and agree with. Or they would say, you know, maybe it's kind of weird, but maybe they pull the player aside and say, "Okay, what do you think your card was?" And then he tells them what the card was. And then they pull the players aside and say, "Okay, what do you think the card was?" And if without knowing each other's answers, and if it's true, then they go into the muck and find the card because they agreed. You know what I mean? I don't really know. It's kind of weird, but it's the only thing I could think of because it was a face-up card. So it's not like it was a secret, and it's not like... you know, he could be lying about it, especially if two people agreeing on it. So, really, I mean, it's so such a weird thing, but that, I mean, that's what I, it's not fair that this guy gets, there's no way to protect the door card, so it's not fair that he would lose out on that, so.
Hey, I tell you, I'm going to take a staple gun to my live horse tournaments now, man. I'm going to staple that bad boy right to the felt. That little dealer gets her happy finger. Sorry, you're going to rip that card in half to get it from me.
But that's all I could think of, really, to make it fair. I mean, other than that, I mean, you muck his hand and say sorry, you know, a dealer error, but...
Well, Chris, you'll be happy to know that you qualify for a tournament director spot at Palm Beach Kennel Club.
Really?
Because that is almost exactly what happened. Now, I don't know whether that's the correct thing to do, but that was what happened, and wow. I think we were all happy with it there.
Yeah.
What happened was the tournament director was called over. The player said it was a 9. I believe it was a red 9. A couple other players said, yeah, it was definitely a 9. I don't remember what color it was. So the tournament director grabbed the muck, took a couple steps back so no one could see it, leafed through it. There was only one 9 in the muck. It was a 9 of clubs, so he gave it back to the player. So the player thought it was a red 9. It turned out to be a black 9. Then action picked up where it should have started before.
Wow.
I guess I've seen once before in a stud game a tournament director, or not a tournament director, but a floor going into the muck to restore a card. But it just seems so kind of weird because in Hold'em or Omaha, you would never,
right?
You know, once a card's in the muck, it's in the muck. But you're right, it's a door card. It's up. It's exposed already. So
yeah,
it seems to be the best solution. I've been trying to think of whether there's a better solution other than just killing the guy's hand, and that's just unfortunate.
I think a better solution would be to make sure that more people play mixed games so that dealers are used to up cards being out and dealing stud games and not pulling in the door card when they're not supposed to.
Yeah, there you go. But we'll work on that.
But wow, that's pretty wild that happened. And well, no, that was the first rotation, obviously, right? Because you didn't make it through to second rotation.
Yeah, I made it through one, and I went out in the second hold'em, and I was playing well, and then just jammed the pot in stud eight with buried aces, and there are no low boards on there, so I was, it frustrated me. I couldn't get these guys to fold anything.
Oh man!
And they both hit on the river. Boom. Lost a big stack, and then in hold'em I made a huge mistake and with my last bit of money, but on the road.
Well, I know what always cheers you up is rifling through your papers on the Ante Up news desk.
Yeah, maybe find papers to rifle through.
And clearing up the Ante Up nation as to what's going on in the poker world.
All right, here we go. Party Gaming PLC has agreed to buy the World Poker Tour for $12.3 million in cash, much more than a previous suitor offered for the poker tour. Party Gaming provides 30% of WPT's revenue as it is now, Reuters reports.
So, now, Party Gaming, that's what Sexton was, right? That's Sexton's.
Exactly.
Oh, wow, very interesting.
Not in the U.S. now, but I think they're chomping on the bit to get back in the U.S. I mean, they were big here, obviously, for a while, into that ugly, ugly law. But they'll certainly be back with a vengeance, I think, once they're allowed to. But
sweet.
Much more money for the WPT out of that. PokerStars has announced a new TV show in which its top players will face off against PokerStars pros. Poker News Daily is reporting this. Players will have to win their seat in an online tournament, and then, Chris, provide a video explaining why they should be picked for the show.
Wow, this is kind of a marriage of Face the Ace and the Best Damn Poker Show.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Because we were just talking last week. I haven't seen Face the Ace yet. You've suffered through it. But just from what I've read from other people, one of the problems is that there's no control over these people that win.
Exactly. There's no
screening. You get on, and yeah, if they're not made for TV, it can be really painful for the TV audience. So, and it's kind of tough for poker, too, right? You know, you want to be able to have a tournament where somebody can win. They don't have to be pretty or smart or particularly good.
That's going to suck, though, for the player. The player's going to be like, yeah, I won my seat on TV. Here's my video. What do you mean I'm boring? What do you mean I'm boring and not good for TV? What do you mean I'm ugly and what are you talking about? I can't. You're not going to put me on now? I won a freaking tournament. Oh man, I feel bad for the first person who gets rejected. How's that going to make you feel? You're not good enough to make a TV poker show.
But I think it's a good idea. We'll see. We'll see whether it's the little tweak makes it better. But you're right. There are going to be some bruised egos.
Yeah.
But again, it's poker though.
That's what it goes.
And then finally, Chris, the Palms Poker Room in Las Vegas now allows players to redeem their club points earned while playing live poker for additional poker chips. This comes from the Las Vegas Advisor.
So, like, you can get cash game chips, is what you're saying? Like,
Yeah. You know, before, obviously, Grandy over there playing the slots all day, dumping $2,000 in the one-armed bandits can go and get, you know, $100 in cold hard cash from the Players Club. He'd be all excited. Woohoo! I won! but I don't believe it's ever been that way in any poker room where you could actually just get chips back, and particularly from your the comps you made in the room. I mean, usually you got to use that stuff for,
like,
food or
breakfast.
Rooms or something like that, but I think it's kind of ingenious. I don't know why anybody hasn't thought of that before. Now you're pumping that money right back in the game, so you get it right back.
Yeah.
You know, you pump that prime rib into your player. You ain't getting that. Well, you're getting it back, but
oh god,
it's just gonna cost you more money to get it back. You know? God. Plumbing up at the 14th floor or something.
Oh but. Man, this sounds like the perfect time to move on to our hotline. Our hotline number is 813-448-1120. If you call that number and we use your clip and Chris doesn't lose it somehow, we will give you something cool. This clip comes from Eric from Ohio, who's had a problem with using two decks on the home game.
Hey, guys. Just want to call in. This is Eric from Ohio. We spoke a while ago. Listened to one of the podcasts and remembering that a few weeks ago you were talking about one of you hating playing in a home game with two decks. I'm not really a fan of it myself, but I've got a funny story with it. I was the next to deal, so I've got the cards ready to go. The guy dealing had two people, one of them all in. They turn up their cards pre-flop. You have aces versus kings, so the kings know that they're basically drawn dead, you know, two outs to go. They've got them covered by suits even. And the dealer's not paying attention. He's talking. I hadn't been paying attention, my own fault. So I look over, see that they're waiting. I say, are you ready? They say, yeah. So I lay the flop, and a king comes. So the king is celebrating until about 5 seconds later, somebody realizes that I'm dealing the blue deck, and they're playing red cards.
Now, this is not unheard of, because I have actually done this in Gambit's game. I start to deal, and I'm like, wait a minute, why am I dealing? That's not the deck. And that's happened many times, actually, because you're out of the hand, and you got a deck in your, you know, and you're watching the action. You feel the deck in your hand, because you're the next one to deal. It's happened a few times, I think, in Gambit's game, where people start to do it, and then they get caught.
Well, I got to say, I've been an adamant proponent of two decks, actually four decks in a game for a long time. But this call has changed me. I am now anti-multiple decks in a game. Oh, wait a minute. I've always been adamant against that.
I was wondering where you're going with that, because I know you hate it. I don't know. You've never had two decks in your house at one time, never mind in the home game at your house.
But no, I understand. Again, I'm not going to rehash all this stuff about the two decks, but you know, but his point about people not paying attention and talking, you know, that's what doesn't happen as much in a casino. I mean, the dealer's paid there to pay attention.
Yeah.
And in a home game, it's supposed to be social. It's supposed to be fun. So people are going to talk, and you shouldn't be punishing people for that.
Right.
So you're just given. It's like putting a bullet in the gun. Giving a second deck to somebody who's having a good time talking to their friends, you're just, you know,
asking for trouble.
Sometimes they're going to actually push that trigger without the safety on, and you're going to blood all of your table. Put that gun away, let the adults handle it, you know?
Well, tell him what he wins.
All right, Eric from Ohio, you won a lovely, lovely set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com. Email us your address at podcast@anyupmagazine.com. We'll get that lovely swag out to you. And once again, that lovely hotline number that Chris told you twice already, 813-448-1120. And you can also send us an email at that address to for the mailbag,
yeah,
which this week comes from Don from Highland, Michigan. You notice how I got an Ohio and a Michigan guy back-to-back there?
Yeah, some rivalry going on there.
Can you tell that college football is starting here pretty
soon? Right around the corner, baby.
Do you want to handle the bad bag?
Well, I don't think the Any Up Nation wants to listen to my nasalness any longer than it has to. Why don't you read it?
All right. Don from Highland, Michigan writes, as a casual online player of No Limit Hold'em, what strategy would you suggest for increasing bankroll, which for the sake of discussion is $50. Are there specific games to focus on? Cash, single tables, multi-tables? What limits or buy-ins? With time constrained of playing 5 to 10 hours per week, what is a realistic expectation of bankroll growth?
Okay, well, here's the thing. When I was disciplined and I was playing a lot online and really didn't care about how much I won, but rather the percentage that I won.
Uh-huh.
I had a small bankroll like this $50 stake that he suggested. I really loved playing the micro limits and just exposing the players for the learners that they were, you know, for the fact that they were, you know, just starting out and beginners and whatever.
Right.
So I suggest the really micro limit cash games where you can just sit there, really, really learn the tendencies of players, really outplay them. Pick up really big hands and just be comfortable with it as you build your bankroll steadily. I mean, I can see him very easily winning, even at the micro limits, like the 1-2 cent or whatever. I can see him winning a couple of bucks, up to $5 in a 5 to 10 hour week. More than that, obviously. I think he can even win $10, you know, and if your bankroll is 50 and you've won 10, that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? That's 20% bankroll increase every week, so that's what I would do. That's how I was enjoying poker a lot online, was playing the really small limits and just not really worrying about the pressure of, you know, of high stakes or whatever, and just, not high stakes, but you know what I'm saying. Just,
right.
But really the micro limits cash games were, if you really know what you're doing, then you're gonna make money every session. And it's maybe not be a lot of money, but when you're considering a $50 bankroll, $5 is 10%. So.
Yeah. The last thing you want to do in this situation is, go broke. So
exactly,
multi-tables are kind of like swinging for the fences, I think.
Yeah.
If you hit one out of the park, your bankroll is going to swell pretty big, even at like a dollar tournament, which is probably the most you'd want to buy into for this kind of bankroll. But you're going to go through a bunch of them where you get nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Look at it like you said. Well, let's just say that he wasn't playing dollar ones and he was playing $5 tournaments, which usually are the cheapest tournaments you could buy into, but they do have dollar ones too. But really, if you're going to if cashing 10% of the time is the norm, you're going to use your whole bankroll to cash once. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So clearly, I think cash games, unless, you know, 50. Okay, so let's say you played 50 $1 tournaments. But, yeah, I would stick with the cash games, I think, and the really, really micro limits. That's the best.
Yeah, game. And the other thing, too, is if you're only playing 5 to 10 hours a week, one tournament is going to eat up a lot of that for no payoff or a long shot of payoff. And you really need to grind out some money, get that bankroll up, so... and even sit and goes, for that matter. I mean, the last an hour, you're only going to get 5 to 10 of them in at most a week. I think you're right. I think I would go with the cash game.
Awesome.
Dag.
You know what it was? It's the relaxing cruise that allows us to now agree with each other.
Yes, that's it.
We've gotten all the stress and strain out of our relationship, and now we can agree on something.
All right, Don from Highland, Michigan, we appreciate you sending your mailbag. And here's something that will help increase that $50 bankroll. You have won a $10 online staking package from getastake.com. So use that 10 bucks wisely, run it up, and we'd be happy to hear your success stories after you do it, because we have faith in you, Don.
Absolutely. And, man, you just increased your bankroll by, what, 20% already just by being on the show.
Just by being on the show.
That should have been one of the suggestions. All right, well, last week on the 1 Minute Mystery, it was part 6, and the blinds were 80 and 160, and we had 2,100. We opened from middle position with a bet of 480 with the ace of diamonds and the seven of spades. And the player on our left called, and we were heads up with a flop of king of diamonds, seven of clubs, and ace of hearts. So we paired our ace. And we checked.
Paired our seven, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ace is up. And we checked, hoping our opponent would bet, but he checked, too. And then, of course, the worst card of all cards comes, the king of spades in a turn. So he wants to know if we bet, and if we do, how much. So, Scott, why don't you take it from there?
All right. I said this is our first real pickle in this really cool ride along with Columbo series. And I'm going to pause here to congratulate our favorite detective, because this has been a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not that the 1 Minute Mystery wasn't fun, because it was great in its own way, but this has been really kind of a good change of pace. But I think this is our first real pickle. You know, we're down to about 1,600. The pot's 1,200. I got to think now it's a shove or check fold. I mean, I don't know what kind of bet you could put in. I mean, with 8,160, that it's going to leave you much behind. You know, I like playing a short stack. I think I do it well. I don't know whether Columbo can play a short stack. So I would be fine check folding here. Though there's certainly a strong case made to be for pushing. So I guess I'd flip a coin here. Well, you know me. I get run over, so I'm probably going to do the check fold here.
Yeah, you always err on the side of caution, which is fine, and that's that. I wouldn't disagree with either way. So. But I think I'm going to bet here, because if he had an ace, I think he probably would have bet the flop to see where he was. And since he didn't bet, or if he had a king, I think he would have bet the flop too. So
yeah, that's what I think. I think he's probably scared of the ace. So a king is a very likely holding, right?
Well, I don't know. I feel like I'm betting here. I'm going to bet like 500 or so and see what he does. I guess that'll knock me to what?
700. Or, I mean, no, I'll get you 1,100, I guess.
So I think I can live with 1,100 if he comes over the top and I need to make a decision, but I'm going to have to put some money out there to see where I am.
All right, and, so you're putting 500 out, hoping that he's going to take it down if he gives you any kind of...
Yeah, if it seems like he's really strong and he comes over the top and puts me all in, I know...
Well, he's either going to fold, which is what you want, but if he calls or raises... raising, you're saying you're out of it.
Raising,
what happens
probably
if he calls?
If he calls, then we'll see what the river is. I mean, it's hard to say, because the river could be an ace. Could be
all
another,
right, let's
another
say the river doesn't improve for you.
I think at that point I'd probably check and all then right. See what he does. It seems to me that if he had a king, he might have bet to see where he was. If he had an ace, he might have bet to protect his hand. You could have Jack-10 or Queen-Jack. So I just feel like with the position, and he doesn't bet, he's afraid. So, but like you well, said, right, man, so the king.
Just in the interest of the discussion here, I'm not picking on my my ailing friend here. I'll do that after the show.
Okay.
But I think by the 500 bet, there's two or three things could happen, and two of them are bad. Kind of the old Woody Hayes thing.
Right.
You know, if he raises it, then you lose that money. You got to fold. If he calls, then you're in this weird situation on the river where you almost have to improve to feel safe betting. And since you're out of position, he's probably going to make a bet to make you fold. So either way, you've lost, a third of your stack here almost?
Right.
With the bet of 500, the only thing you can hope for that's good is that the player's going to fold, which I'm not saying isn't a likely scenario. But I don't know if it's worth that extra 500. I mean, now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty of our stacks, so.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is I would have bet the flop. That's the other thing, too. So, because I've given up control of the hand now. Now I'm trying to take control of the back, which is why I'm betting. I just feel like he's weak. If he had any of this, he would have bet either to see where he was or protect his hand, and he didn't. So that's why I'm betting, just to take it down.
All right. What about a bet of a min bet of 160? Just hope that it's kind of a post oak kind of thing. Because I think a player would, if they don't have an ace or a king, would fold to a bet of 160, wouldn't they?
Well, unless he's a savvy player and takes it as weakness, and then he would come over the top, and then we're screwed. But yeah, I mean, maybe that is kind of fishy though, betting 160.
Yeah, and I want it to look fishy. I want it to look like I'm trying to reel him in, and at the same time, not commit any more of my chips than I have to.
Yeah, but then again, what if you just get the call, like you were saying before? I mean, I guess it costs.
Yeah, but then I've only lost 160 of my stack.
Yeah,
you're gonna do the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's an argument for all kinds of stuff here, but
and if that's the case, I mean, you could bet another 160 on the river, and if he just calls, then you've only bet 320 versus 500, and you have the same situation and see the showdown.
Yeah. That just seems like a real weak bet. I think that you're going to...
Oh, it absolutely is. That's what's beauty about it.
Yeah, you say it's
you know
beauty.
I'm check-folding anyhow.
You're check-folding anyway. All right, well, let's see what happens, and then hear what's going to happen in Part 7.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and welcome to Episode 7 of Ride Along with Columbo. If you recall, after bleeding chips, we flopped top 2. It went check-check, and when the king comes, we are deciding whether or not to bet and how much. I reluctantly decide to bet here. I'm really hoping a 6 will call and take a ride along and not try to take the pot away, and that his flop check is telling me that he didn't have an ace. And I still recall this player on my left flatting me with Queen Jack. Even though I say he's going to fold here, it's a mistake not to bet. I need to price him out. I would normally play 2 pair faster than this already, but with aces up I decided I might be well suited to let him catch up a bit. Perhaps he caught a king. I bet the 640, and he folds. Nope. Action over. I now have a starting stack size to show for my 90 minutes of play. Our M of 12 is disappointing, but a good detective never gives up until the case is over. But I do pause here to think about my play so far. If I'm going to make a run in a tournament like this, I'm going to have to start playing excellent poker. Sloppy play and incorrect beats are no way to go through life, son. The levels have progressed to 100-200, and I resolve myself to stop playing like a beat cop and start playing like a lieutenant. Folds around to a player 2 to my right, the one who a few hands ago bet 4x big blind and I re-raised preflop with air and took the pot down from. He's our only suitor in the hand, and he limped. I'm dealt queen of spades, eight of spades, and the big blind, but I just check. The flop is king of diamonds, queen of diamonds, four of clubs. How do you want to approach it?
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Chris, all right, we're back on from the cruise, and aside from your swine flu, I think it was a smashing success.
It was. It was way better than I ever thought it could have been, to be honest. I really thought it was... I really wasn't sure what to expect, but I didn't expect this. It was really a ton of fun, and just so successful. I was so happy.
And you know, people kept coming up to us the entire time and telling us how much fun they were having. I mean, obviously, we had some little kinks and stuff that we'll work out for the next one, but by and large, it went off very well. We had a lot of fun. The room was hopping most of the time.
Yeah.
Cash games and tournaments, and it was just great. You know, here's the thing. I've been on a couple cruises, and I've never been on a cruise with people I knew other than, of course, my wife or my friends that came with me.
Right.
And that might have been one of the cooler things, too, is just roaming around the ship and bumping into people everywhere.
Yeah.
And even if you didn't know your name, you recognized them from the room, or they had that cool little Annie Up name badge hanging from their neck, and you know, just a smile or a wave or something like that. And it made the whole thing kind of fun, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was kind of cool to just, a couple of times I would just sit in the back of the room, don't play in or anything, just being there and watching all these people enjoying themselves or playing poker and knowing that we brought this together. Just, it was a real good feeling.
Good, good. Well, we had a lot of good moments on the board, and we'll kind of break it down here a little bit and talk about it, because I know people want to hear some stories, but they also need to hear some success.
Yeah.
There was no bigger success, I think, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, than in our Annie Up Poker Tour event. The final day, we did a $150 buy-in tournament, real good structure put together by Jody and Cassie, our poker room managers. We got 51 starters. And the final table was a who's who of Annie Up, I think.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. People will be happy to know that Mike Faso made the final table and finished, was it third?
I don't remember, actually. I should know that, right?
I think
Let me get my news desk.
Faso was fourth.
Finished fourth.
And Steve, our good friend Steve, was third from our home game. And Dr. Frank Toscano was fifth.
So three home gamers.
Three home gamers, third, fourth, and fifth at the final table that paid six spots.
Yeah, it was absolutely great. Just watching it, coming in and seeing him at the final table. And I think Frank won his seat in during a satellite, right?
He did. He won his seat in a satellite.
I don't remember if Steve did either. I know Faso didn't. But man, what a successful final table. And then we had a couple other friends of Andy Up that were at the final table as well, too.
Yep.
Very good event. I think people had a good time. And I think the first place was somewhere around $2,000, which is not bad at all.
Yeah, they chopped it up first and second for the money. But it was $2,000 for the first place and $1,800 for second. So what a nice tournament, what a nice turnout, and a nice showing for the home game.
And, you know, we also, we've been looking hard on a new team tournament concept here at Annie Up headquarters, Chris.
Yes.
And trying to do something different that's not been done in team tournaments out there. And I think we came up with an interesting kind of concept where it's four simultaneous tournaments. You have four member teams. Each of your teammates is in a different one of these tournaments. And then the winners of those tournaments go heads up, and you're playing for your entire team at that point. So if you got people cheering in the background, you know, oi, 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 Aussie, Aussie, and waving flags, your nationalities and stuff. We decided to try it for the first time on this cruise, and I will personally say it was a tremendous success.
Yeah. You know why you'll say that? Because you won it. You won the whole thing for us, baby. It was awesome. It was me, you, our good friend Sam Minatello from One Eye Jacks, and our other buddy Patrick Murphy from the Silks Poker Room at Tampa Bay Downs. We all got together to make a team, and you and Patrick carried the flag for the Annie Up team, the Annie Up Nation, as it is, and both made the finals.
Yep, yep.
Won your table. I went out on a brutal beat. We'll talk about that later. Sam got knocked out a little bit earlier, and then you guys squared off against each other. Which actually worked out in our favor, I thought, because it made us more money, to be honest. And then you took it down in a matter of minutes. It was hilarious, because I figured, okay, well, I don't need to watch Scott and Patrick play each other, because obviously I'm rooting for whoever wins that to win the final. So I'm going to go play some cash games till the final happens. 2 minutes later, Patrick walks by and says, Scott won. I said, oh, okay, he beat you. I'm going to get out and watch the final. He says, oh, no, he beat me like 5 minutes ago. He's already won the whole thing. I said, what? What do you mean it's over? And sure enough, Scott won in like three hands, and I missed the whole thing. But I still got the payday, so that was good.
Yeah, yeah. So our team carved up first and, well, third and fourth get the same money. So that's not bad. Not a bad payday. We had fun and it was good.
Yeah. What was really weird was how I got eliminated. And then the funny thing is that the next day, it's how you were eliminated from a different tournament, from the Antioch Poker Tour event. But anyway, we're down three-handed in the team event, just real quick, and I had been, you know, just playing so tight all along, and I finally got on a rush, and I was basically tied for the chip lead, three-handed, to win this seat and to go into the finals heads-up against you or Patrick. And I get king-king against a real aggressive player on my left, and I'm in the small, and he's in the big. So I limp, thinking that he's going to raise like he had been doing all day.
Right.
I limp with king-king, and he just knuckles under, and we see a flop. So the flop comes like 10, or no, it's jack, and then 3-deuce, okay? Jack, 3-deuce, rainbow. I check to him, and he goes all in, and I insta-call. He turns over queen 6 offsuit, totally bluffing, and it comes 4-5.
Oh man!
For him to make a 6-high straight and knock me out, and he had 500 chips more than me. We're basically one chip more than me. Otherwise, I win that table easily because the other guy's a short stack, and I just kill him. And then we have 3 of the 4 spots in the final. And then that's what happened. That's how you went out, right? In the Antioch Poker Tour event.
Yeah, the next day was the Antioch Poker Tour event, and of course, you know, we were up late playing and running the room, so I overslept. Because my partner did not rap on my door or do a wake-up call for me or otherwise just baby me around so I get up in time. So I get up there late, which is all right. I kind of feel like Phil Hellmuth. And played for a while. I was doing all right. And then took a bad beat. And then I was kind of short stacked. And Faso is to my right. And he makes a, I don't know, like a standard 3X raise or something like that. I shove all my chips in. And it was like 2.5 times raise on top of that, Chris. And Faso thinks about it for about a nanosecond and calls with pocket sevens.
Oh, man.
So, of course, I turn on my cards and say, oh, sigh. And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe he made that call. I mean, I wanted to call because I needed the chips to chip up, right?
All right.
And then the flop comes out, woo-hoo, the turn comes out, river comes out, woo. And someone goes straight. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. There's no straight. I don't have a straight. Oh. he went runner to straight. Same thing.
Oh, man.
Boom. Booted.
Well, I think yours is worse because you lost to Faso.
Well, that's true. That's true.
But
he went on. He put my chips to good use, and so that's good. That's good.
But, I wasn't the first time that I wanted to call somebody a name at the table. So we're in the Antioch Poker Tour event, the same one that you got eliminated on, and it's after dinner, so I had made the dinner break, and the third hand back, I look down at pocket aces, and I'm under the gun, and I make it the standard 3X or 3.5X, whatever it is, and I get 2 callers on my left. Flop comes king-king 2. I'm like, yeah. I mean, that's a good flop for me because, you know, what are the odds that somebody has a king in their hand now, you know? So I bet pot or whatever it was, and I get checked, and I get raised all in. And so I'm like, oh, my God. But the way it was done, I'm trying to read this player. I'm trying to see if, you know, they're on a club draw because there were 2 clubs, whatever it is. So I'm giving it some thought, and this old guy in the corner goes, clock! And they called the clock on me. And I was like, I've never had the clock called on me in my life, and this is my cruise. It's my poker room, and you're calling a clock on me. I was like, are you serious? So then, you know, they got 60 seconds to act on your hand, and your hand will be dead. And I'm like, so I'm taking up the whole time just to be a dork. And then I made the call, and they had king, queen, and I was knocked out.
Yeah.
But you affectionately, for the rest of the cruise, referred to me as Clocksenza.
Yes, I love it.
So that's my new nickname.
And I saw that the guy that called the clock, we call him Panama Jack because he had one of his Panama Jack hats.
Yeah.
His name is Jim, I think. And I saw him this week at the Palm Beach Kennel Club, and I walked in, and we smiled at each other. I went over there, and I shook his hand, and I'm like, I got to shake the hand of the guy that called the clock on Chris Kassens in his own tournament. I loved it. And this guy's, you know, he's great. He's real direct. He's like, you got to know that she had the king. I'm like, you don't know my buddy, Chris.
Man, she could have had queens. She could have had jacks. She could have had the nut flush draw. It could have been anything, you know.
Okay.
But,
right,
but he was a great guy. I actually played a lot with him after that tournament, and
yeah,
we got
right.
along
I
really
over.
Well.
I walked over, and I saw you playing 2-4 limit, which had to kill you to begin with.
Yeah, it was.
And then I see Panama Jack sitting next to you, and I ran over to Fasto, and I'm like, because we're still at the table together at the India Poker Tour event, and I'm like, I whispered to him, like, this is great! Chris is playing 2-4 limit with the guy that called the clock on it right next to him. The cruise cannot get any better than it is,
man.
Right?
Oh, man. But, yeah, well, you brought up the 2-4 game, and there was a lot of variety on the ship cash games. We had 2-4, 4-8 limit. We had no limit, anything from 1-3 to 2-5. They also had a 20-40 game that was going pretty well, actually.
Oh, that's right.
For the limit poker. And they had a fun thing, too, in a 2-5 game where they had this $10 rock.
Yeah, the rock.
The rock. And they took 10 single chips and put them in a stack and then put a rubber bands around them. And then if you had the rock and they could buy the rock, but if it was on you, you had to put it in as a blind. And it was all this weird stuff tied to it. It's something I'd really never seen, to be honest. But other games were dealt, too. They had we had Ho going.
Yeah.
We had Horse going with kills. It was mostly 4-8. I think they tried to get a 3-6 game going, but it never happened. So it was mostly just a 4-8 game. PLO the first day, and then that was it. No one played PLO after that. I think everyone went broke or something. I don't know what happened there. But really, just a lot of variety, and I was disappointed that the Dealer's Choice game didn't go.
Yeah, our Rania Poem game that we thought was going to get going. And, you know, I don't know. It's just probably a timing thing, I think, for a lot of the time. We scheduled a lot of tournaments, including some Midnight Blisses, which I cashed in the last one, by the way.
Yeah, I made the final table, but you
I went
cashed.
2-for-3.
Yeah,
I went 2-for-3.
You represent.
but the tournament's kind of affected our live games a little bit. That's one of the tweaks that we'll do next time. And maybe we'll get that Andy Up Home game going, because I know some people wanted to play it. But yeah, there is plenty to play for everybody.
Well, there was a lot of funny stuff going on, too. We should probably get into that since the show's already about an hour long. And we have Lee sitting in the green room waiting to do a Hand of the Week with us. So there was one pretty funny story that started out. You know, this is probably the first time Carnival's ever done anything like this. And so the staff really didn't know what to expect either from the Carnival cruise. And so every once in a while, a cocktail waiter, a nice little guy from Indonesia, would come in and want to know if anybody wanted drinks and stuff. So people would get drinks from him, and then they would hand him a dollar chip from the Ante Up Poker Room. So he'd take the chip, put it in his pocket, and then walk away. And he'd been done this for a couple of days. And then finally, and he walks up to Cassie, our poker room manager, and he shows her the chip with this impish look on his face, like, you know, what do I do with this? So he hands her the chip, and she gives him a dollar. And he, like, all of a sudden he brightens up, and then reaches into his pocket and pulls out, like, 41-dollar chips. And he's like, yes, yes, that's all. And she's like, yes, yes. And then she starts paying him off. After that, you saw the guy in the room, like, 24-7. He never left the room. Because they're not supposed to get tipped. I mean, it's like an all non-cash thing. So when he saw the greenbacks... when he saw the greenbacks, he was freaking out. He's like, oh, my God. This is awesome. So the guy it was hilarious. He starts pouring chips out of his pocket. And, oh, man, you couldn't get rid of him after that. He was stopping me in the hallway, like, you know, 300 yards from the poker room. You drink? You need drink? And I was like, no, dude, I'm good. I'm good. We'll go back into the room and get some money, you know? That was pretty damn funny.
Oh, that was great. One of my favorite stories was the second to last day. Or it was the last day, actually, wasn't it? The day that I overslept for the India Poker Tour event, you had no chance to oversleep it, Chris. Because I believe at the early hour of about 7 a.m. or so.
Yeah, it was, I don't know. It was pretty early. Maybe it was around 8 or so. But
it was early enough because you were both still asleep. You had a nice little rap at your door. And I'm sure you had some very choice words for me, thinking that it was me messing with you. And boy, do I wish I could mess with you like this.
Unbelievable.
But no, it was security from the ship. And they just barged right in.
Well, here's what happened. Okay, you know, everyone went ashore to Cozumel the day before. And Gene and I have been to Cozumel numerous times, and I was feeling a little under the weather, and obviously it was, now I find out it's the swine flu, but I was like, you know what, I'm just going to stay behind, I'll leave the chips and the safe in our room, and I'll leave the privacy sign up, so that way no one will come into our room, and I'll feel better about the whole situation, I'm on ship and everything like that. So we left the privacy sign up while everyone was ashore, and we left it on, because the poker room didn't open until 8 o'clock. So we just basically left it on all day. So the next day, the privacy sign's still on because we're sleeping, you know. So there's a rap on the door. I open the door. Security guy's like, yeah, it's ship policy that if you leave the privacy sign on your door for more than 24 hours, that we have to come in and inspect the cabin. I said, what are you talking about? I said, well, everybody leaves the privacy. People don't want you in their room. Well, we have to come in and clean the room, and we have to, you know, and we have to make sure everything's okay. I'm like, well, there's my wife. She's right there in bed, you know, covered up. She's fine. She's alive. She's not bound to the bed. That was Thursday night. So I'm like, you know, you guys can just, you know, get lost. And he's like, no, we have to come in. And I was like, all right. So I figured he was just going to peek in, make sure she was alive, and then head out. No. This guy walks into the cabin, walks around the bed while my wife is in bed sleeping, puts his hand under the mattress and under the bed to make sure nothing's under there. What he's looking for, I don't know. Livestock? cannabis? You know, I didn't even go ashore, so I don't know. You know, so he's like, well, sometimes, you know, people are you know, abducting infants. And I'm like, wait a minute. Were there reports of missing children on the ship? Did anyone, like, say they're missing a child? Do you need to come into this room? So he, like, goes into the bathroom and checks our closets and everything. And meanwhile, they leave the door open so, like, the whole world can walk by and see my wife lying in bed and me with my hair all messed up, you know, sleeping hair.
No, not your hair.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm in my robe. And how embarrassing is this? And you know what? I mean, my wife was fuming. It took, like almost better part of the day for her to finally, you know, calm down. How ridiculous is that, Scott, that you can't leave your privacy sign for more than 24 hours on the door? I mean, how ridiculous is that?
I think it's hilarious. I actually think it's hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, Fast and I are talking about it. You know, it is Carnival Ship. They can make whatever rules they want. So
yeah, all
which
right.
Which means
well,
it's not ridiculous. But next time, man, just, you know, change it every once in a while.
I was protecting our interests. I was protecting our interests.
Just 1 minute. Go out there and turn it. Woo, woo.
Yeah, like they're going to keep track of that.
Hey, that little cabin steward, man, he's like right there on the go, man.
Yeah. And then afterward, he's like, so sorry about what happened this morning. Yeah, right, pal. Don't worry, I left you off the tip sheet.
Oh, if you could.
Yeah.
You know, those cruise ship cabins can be dangerous, even as spacious as they are on the Carnival. But our good friend Sam showed up the second day after a very, what can we say? Intoxicating first day. That's a good word.
Yeah.
Yes, we're you know, we had an open bar cocktail party the first day to let everybody know what's going on, and Sam takes the mic from us and goes on a nightclub routine in the middle of our thing. Apparently sobers up in the morning, but maybe not enough because, you know, his signature bald head that you've seen on the World Series of Poker, he was keeping it nicely crisply bald and nicked his ear
so bad that he had to wear a bandage for the rest of the cruise on his ear.
A little Van Gogh action, man. It was hilarious. And then finally, when I got off port, I actually got off port because, you know, I didn't want the guy storming into my room like he did yours.
Yeah.
And Patrick Murphy, our good friend from the Soaks, his wife said, hey, I want to go parasailing. I made the mistake of saying, you know what, I've always wanted to parasail too. She would not let it go. So we get in the port together, and she's like, we're going parasailing, right? And I'm like, okay. Because, you know, I can't look like a wimp in front of somebody else's wife. My wife is used to seeing it. But so I went parasailing, Chris. I was about 9 stories in the air or something ridiculous like that, attached to nothing but a little string of yarn.
Yeah.
And completely terrified for the entire ride, but it was pretty darn cool. And, you know, I paid $15 for a photo to remind myself never to do that ever again.
Well, it was a great week, and, of course, we owe a lot of this success to Jody and Cassie and their dealing staff. I have never seen a better group of dealers, really, and it just, they handpicked the perfect dealers. These are guys who love to play, and they love to deal, and they were smart, they were good about it, they knew all the games. And you know what else, too? The cards, the J Design cards, were a huge hit. Everyone loved them. They were excellent cards. They really held up. The dealers even said it. They all remarked about how well they hold up and how bright they were and how good they were. And you know, just thanks to Jason and his cards. And it was great. It was a really good time.
Yeah, yeah. They're the official playing cards of Antioch Magazine. And we'll give a shameless plug in case you want to get them at www.classicplayingcards.com. Check him out. Jason was a great guy, and those cards are great. A couple things that we need to work on. Next time, we're going to work on it, including the equipment. And, you know, our brand new cash game chips, which were beautifully designed by you, my friend. we just didn't make them sticky enough, I guess.
Yeah, grippy enough.
I guess we got to put some goo on them, or day glow, or something. Whatever that stuff. They were kind of a little slippery, so we will try to rough those bad boys up.
You know, oddly enough. Jody and Cassie said that baby powder is the way to do it. Isn't that weird?
You would think that
baby powder would make them slipperier, but apparently that's the way to do it. So we're going to take a sample, I think, from the chips, from our Antioch safe, and do a little baggie worth of it and see how they work out. And if it works, then we're going to have to buy a stock in Johnson & Johnson's baby powder and do up the rest of the chips.
Yeah, we're not going to do a baggie of anything in your carnival cabin.
Yeah,
right?
No, that ain't happening.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. And, of course, you know, we got a nice conference room from Carnival, but it just happened to be right next to the disco.
Yeah, and right next to the subwoofer that was on the wall of the disco.
Which is perfect if you're a normal conference group that's only in there during the day when the disco's not there. But we're poker players.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we heard Boots with the Fur about 90 times in a row every night. So we're going to be looking for a better, larger room on the ship, and I think we'll probably get that. And, of course, we'll work on the schedule a little bit, make it a little bit better for everyone. But the most important thing is we are ready to do this again, Chris. Even you, who doesn't like cruising.
Yep.
You're ready to go. You're raring to go.
I enjoyed the four-day cruise. The four-day cruise was not that bad. I enjoyed it. The seven-day one's going to be rough if we ever try that. But if we stick with the four-day one, I'll be on board.
All right. Well, good thing for you that we are sticking with the four-day. March 18th to the 22nd, same ship, Carnival Inspiration, same itinerary, Cosmo, and leaving out of Tampa, same everything, and our good friend Mary Kolb is handling reservations, 727-733-3498, that's 727-733-3498. Give her a ring by August 31st, which is just a couple days away. If you book by then, you get a onboard credit of $25 to $50, depending on what kind of cabin you get. So join us for the next one in March. It'll be spring break. A lot of hotties on board, I bet.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, a lot of hotties in us. So.
All right, well, it was a great cruise, and hopefully I'll beat this swine flu so it'll be a perfect cruise, because right now I'm still, you know, regretting it a little bit. But, you know, but let's wake up Lee out of the green room and move on to Hand of the Week.
This is Joe Seabock, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Once again, Chris, we are happy to welcome back Lee Childs and his great, great analysis for the Hand of the Week segment. And a reminder that Lee is the founder of AcumenPoker.net, a great online poker training advice site. And he's also a brand new Lock Poker Pro. Lee, thanks for coming back once again.
Hey guys, great to be back.
All right, we've got a live game hand now, cash game. Now, how much live cash games do you play these days, Lee?
You know, it varies. I still play mostly tournaments, but but I've gotten back recently to playing a little more cash. Play some online, and I usually try to get in some sessions when I go to play tournaments live. The occasional home game, but not too often. But I am doing a lot of instruction at the WPT boot camps. Cash camps actually just coming up this weekend, which I guess will be last weekend. once this comes out, I'll be in Orlando for a cash camp. So, I'm actually getting back into a little more cash these days.
Excellent. All right, well, we'll test your cash game knowledge here with the hand of the week from George from Greenwich, Connecticut. Fellow nutmugger there, Chris.
My old stomping grounds.
Now, do you call Greenwich folks nutmeggers too, or are they really just kind of New Yorkers?
No, they're nutmeggers with an attitude.
Oh, okay, all right. All right, well, our hero George here says he's generally a limit player. I love you already, George. But he's been reading some books, and now he's given 1-2 no limit a try in Mohegan Sun, and has been doing pretty well. And he's had a really good session. He's up to about $1,500 at a 1-2 game.
Wow.
So I would say that's probably a pretty good session.
Wow.
Getting ready to leave, and he says that when he leaves, he always straddles his last hand. And if he wins, he plays another orbit. If not, he goes home. And he says he thinks of it as toking the table. I like that. Give it back to the players that he's fleeced. So he had a hand here where he had pocket aces. That's a nice little final hand in the straddle, right? And held up, and he took a real nice pot off a guy. So that kind of sets up the hand that we're going to talk about today. And here we go. He says a round later, he had not been involved in any pots since then. But the villains in this hand are fairly new to the table. Doesn't have much info on them, except they're both under 30, have around $150, and seem to have played before. And neither appears drunk. So he calls them above average players. I like that. All right, so he's straddling here again. We get a mid-position caller. The button calls. Both blinds call. And our hero looks down at not pocket aces this time, but the old 7-deuce offsuit.
Are you waiting for analysis here? Because I don't think we're going to say anything.
I was waiting for laughter, maybe, but get no reaction. Like, I'm talking to two corpses today. Thanks.
Well, it's a straddle. It's not like he was raising.
I'll just shoulder the whole burden today, all right? I'll do the analysis and the humor and read the hand. Jeez, give me all 3 checks this week, please.
You know, I will say, though, I mean, what's nobody else knows what he has, right? I mean, the last time they all saw him straddle, he woke up with aces and he made a raise and he got to show those down. So, you know, if you're gonna straddle and put money in the pot out of position, which is always a really bad idea, you know, with no information on your cards, then, you know, if it comes to you and people are just calling, I'm gonna raise almost any 2 cards here and try to pick up that pot, especially since the last time I did this, I showed aces. So you can argue going ahead and raising here. I mean, if you're going to raise 2 aces here, and if you're going to, you know, what's the cutoff line? Obviously, 7-deuce off is the worst hand you can have, but if you're typically, you know, going to raise your straddles unless you see something really bad, then. You know, then you're giving away a lot of information there. So I wouldn't be upset with a raise here. In fact, I'd probably be more inclined to raise here, especially considering how much I'm up, how my, you know, my image, I'm so, you know, I've been tight. If I'm this player, you know, George's only, the last hand he played was 2 aces and a straddle. So that's going to be in people's mind that's the kind of hand he has in a straddle.
See, now that's what I'm calling analysis, Chris. It's not that hard. You just gotta talk it out, man.
Well, what about this? What about if this guy straddled more than once? Then maybe someone's trapping him. They're hoping he does that bull that he, you know, of raising just because you straddled, and then they trapped him. So I mean, there's
there's a lot of danger here. But here's the thing, and maybe I'm curious what you guys think here. I don't straddle. I hate it. But if you do straddle, I think you're almost committed to raising most of the time, aren't you?
No. You always say this like you think it's fact. It is not fact.
I'm not saying it's fact. I'm just saying if you're going to put out that extra bet, get that last option, and they have all this dead money. We have, what, 4 callers here now. I want that money right now. I don't care what two cards I have.
Yeah, but the point of a straddle is to play. I mean, not his point, because he likes it, like you said, just make it a toke for the table. He wants to go home. But the point of a straddle is to make the gameplay bigger than it is and make people feel uncomfortable, which is why they're limping. I mean, I understand a raise there, but when you have seven.
Yeah, a raise would make people feel more uncomfortable, wouldn't it?
You get trapped. There's a lot of things to avoid with this.
Why would it matter what you have here, Chris? That's the thing. Like it doesn't matter that you have seven deuce. They can't see your cards. So if you had ace king, you're gonna raise. If you had two aces, two kings, two queens, you know, pretty much any big pair, you're gonna raise. I'm gonna raise most pairs. So it doesn't really matter. You've got people that have shown a lot of weakness, and most of the time, you know, this guy's up $1,500, George. He's, you know, he's. If he raises to $20 like he did last time, chances are at least one or two of them are going to get out of the way, and he's going to make a continuation bet. They're going to miss the flop, and they're just going to fold, and he's going to, you know, either win it right there pre-flop, or he's going to take it down with a continuation bet. If he doesn't, and he doesn't hit the flop, then, you know, it's fine. He's not really risking that much, but he is kind of giving away a lot of information that he's going to raise sometimes out of there, out of his straddle, and not raise sometimes. So he's giving some kind of indication to the strength of his hand, which is okay from time to time. I mean, you know, you're going to make calls in position with certain types of hands, and people will know that you pretty much, you know, you're pretty likely not to have two aces or two kings or something like that. But, you know, I kind of like raising here the majority of the time. It's fine to mix it up. If you're going to check in this spot, then you have to also be willing to check big hands in this spot. You know, and I understand he's about ready to go. I don't know if he plays here regularly or not, and that would factor into some of the decisions as well, as to if he's going to really be giving off any kind of betting pattern tells. But I think it's important that if he's raising with aces here, then he should raise with a wider range, and if he's checking a seven deuce, then he should also check with a pretty wide range. So it makes it a lot easier if you just decide, I'm going to raise if everybody just limps in on my straddle. Just kind of gives you a system there. Same thing if I post in position, say I joined a table in the cutoff or something like that, and people just limp in, I'm raising there a very large percentage of the time. You know, people are just not showing strength, so why not go ahead and you've had to put in this dead money. There's a little extra in the pot. Go ahead and try to pick that pot up right there.
Well, again, I wasn't disagreeing that we shouldn't raise here. What I was saying was that a straddle does not mean automatically raise. And so, you know, and again, there is nothing wrong with wrapping the table here either, depending on, I don't know how he's played his straddle the whole time he's been there. You know,
yep.
he had aces on the last hand, but, you know, you could also be entrapped too. So there's a reason for wrapping and there's a reason for raising. I didn't say not to raise, but Scott thinks it's like, oh, I straddled, I have to raise. And if you get into that mindset, then they're going to trap you every time you do it.
Yeah, but you're going to wake up with hands there as well. So it's fine to have kind of some default rules that you're going to go with. And if you're gonna err on one side or the other, then I would err on the side of just always raising.
All right. See, look at that. We were all ready to move on without even talking about all that. And now we're 45 minutes into the hand of the week, and we haven't got to the flop yet.
Yeah,
see?
Yeah, so much for keeping the hands of the week short, guys.
All right, well, our hero did wrap the table, and so we're going to see a flop of seven of spades, six of hearts, two of hearts, and our hero says, did I mention I'm running good? Of course he is. He flops two pair on this board. Small blind checks, big blind checks, and now it's to us. We are betting. How much are we betting?
Two-thirds of the pot.
Yeah. $8, $10.
So then we've got how many players? Five players or four players?
Pot's $16. Now we got, I believe, four players. Or actually, five maybe, right? Yeah, five.
Yeah, it depends if they took the rake out of it already.
Yeah.
I mean, anywhere, you know, $8 to $12 is fine here. You want to be consistent, so you want to keep it at that same amount that you would normally bet at this table. And, you know, this with... You've got top and bottom pair. It's very vulnerable. There's two hearts on the board. You have no idea about the strength of any of your opponent's hands. So I'm certainly not slow playing once I've hit my two pair here.
Yeah.
I bet about $10-$12.
All right. Well, our hero puts out a bet of $10. He gets the middle position player, the button, middle position player out. The button calls, those small blind calls, big blinds out of the way. Pot is $46. Turn is the nine of spades, making the board seven of spades, six of hearts, two of hearts, nine of spades. So now we got two flush draws working, as well as a weird straight getting there. Small blind checks again. Back to us. What do we do now?
Well, you said it's a weird straight, but, I mean, somebody in the blinds could have 5-8, which is, you know, you're getting so much on your money in the blinds.
But that's a weird straight.
No, I'm just saying, but 5-8 is a good hand. 8-10 is a hand that I would play in a small blind if I had five limpers or a straddler on my left or whatever. So, you know, I'm not saying it's weird, but, yeah, it's I'm still betting to see where I am, quote, to see where I am, like Lee likes to say. So I'm still betting here, probably $20, maybe $25.
Yeah, I mean, I still think I'm good. And you know, and you do kind of find out sometimes where you're at. So it's, you know, like I've said, it's kind of a byproduct of the bet. You know, I'm not betting in order to find out, but I'm gonna continue betting here. You know, if I was ahead before, the only things I'm behind now are the 5-8, the 8-10, 9-7, 9-6. You know, I would expect if I was behind on the flop with, if somebody had, 6-7 or a set, they're almost certainly going to raise on the flop because of the two hearts out there. So I'm not thinking those are the hands that they would typically have. It's possible people do slow play those hands, but you know, most players, if you know, he seems to think they're pretty solid players. So yeah, I think it's more likely a, you know, an 8-7, 9-7, 5-8, 10-8, and it could still be any kind of flush draws that are out there. So yeah, I like the bet here of $30 that he puts out.
All right, like I said, like Lee just said, our hero puts out a bet of $30. The button thinks a bit and shoves for $117. Pot's closing in on $200 now. Small blind goes into the tank, and while he's in the tank, our hero takes this opportunity for a word from our sponsors. I'm sorry. Actually, just to go into the tank himself and think about it. So Lee, I imagine, yeah, too. You're always thinking about this too when somebody else is thinking what they're going to do. But what are we thinking right now when the button shoves and we've got a small blind who is thinking about it?
Well, the Jeopardy music is definitely going to start going off here. Yeah, it's once this guy's willing to commit his stack into both of us and another guy's going in the tank, I'm not feeling real good about my two pair. You know, we've talked before about playing hands for two pair better. You kind of didn't really play this hand intentionally. You know, you made what is kind of a bad play for the most part of straddling to begin with. You know, it's just like you've seen it in a blind, right? So you didn't really play this for two pair better. You did get your two pair, which is typically going to be a winning hand. But now with one guy putting all of his chips in there and another guy really thinking about it, I'm gonna have to really think about whether or not this two pair is good right now.
Yeah, I mean it's really the second pair and the bottom pair, and so many hands beat us. And if somebody's willing to put that much money in with only one card to come, and the other guy's thinking about it, I gotta be beat. One of those two guys have to have me beat with a set or a straight. So I agree. I don't think I can call here. I got a great night. I'm going home anyway. You know, I think I'm folding here.
All right, well, our hero's thinking is that he was wondering if the $30 looked weak enough to shove with overcards. He says probably not, but kids these days, it's possible. he goes through a bunch of other things. But while he's thinking, the small blind calls all in for less, so the pot is now in the neighborhood of $250 to $275. It's going to cost us $87 to see this down. But it sounds like the consensus of our brain trust here is to pick up our chips, go home, and enjoy our victory.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's at minimum a better two pair, and then a set or the straights that could have gotten there. Yeah, so I think there's just a lot more combinations of cards, especially with the two guys in there, that a lot more combinations that beat you than you can beat. So don't look for the hands that you can, you know, don't put them on hands that you think would make a bad play that you can now beat. There's just too many combinations. You're, you know, with your middle and bottom pair, you just need to let this go against the two players, I think.
Yeah.
And I will bare my soul to the Anti-Up Nation because I made a terrible mistake in responding to George when he first wrote this, that I thought I might take a flyer for the $87 to see whether I could boat up, and totally discounting the fact that if I boated up, I probably was going to lose anyhow. So, I mean, maybe it's a lesson for people to think about. all right, so our hero decides what everybody else agrees. He gets rid of this hand, goes home a winner. Says the river comes, it's not memorable, but the small blind barks out, "Don't say 10-8, and flips up 5 of hearts, 8 of hearts.
Makes sense. Great.
Yeah.
Button flips up 10 of diamonds, 8 of diamonds.
Yeah, see, I had a feeling that somebody had 10-8. I wasn't sure. I didn't think they both had straights, but at least a straight there. One of the blinds. You knew one of the blinds probably called for the odds and got there. So, yeah, it's a good lay down.
Yeah, I kind of would have expected like more like the 5-8 off and the 10-8 of hearts. You know, or a different 5-8. I mean, a different, yeah, different 5-8. Because it's kind of a weird play by the 10-8 with just his gut shot on the flop with the two hearts out there.
Yeah.
They just happen to hit perfect.
Yeah, really. He's got diamonds, not hearts. Very weird. Yeah,
much rather have the 5-8 hand in this spot.
Well, once again, Lee, we appreciate your insightful analysis on the hand of the week. Good luck in everything you do, and hopefully we'll have you back very, very soon. But, George, thanks for sending in your hand in, and you are going to win a wonderful Chinese Year of the Animal card protector from poker-pig.com. Get us your birth year, and we will get you the appropriate card protector from pokerpig.com. And everybody else, send a hand of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll break it down and give you some nice swag. Lee, again, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Lee, take it easy.
All right.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.